Welcome to another episode of Out the Rabbit Hole here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We're also on the web at KUCI.org. I'm Robert Larson. It's 4:03 on our Friday afternoon, May 26th, 2006. Wasn't with you last week, got preempted by a baseball game broadcast, but now we're back. So what do we got going today? Well, hey, why worry about global warming or any other environmental concerns when it's all going to end soon? In fact, if we quicken the pace of the environmental destruction, it could hasten the return of the Lord. This arguably insane notion of certain Christians who call themselves dominionists, in conjunction with a faux environmental corporate front movement known as Wise Use, is a driving force in Bush administration policy. My special guest today is Emmy Award-winning broadcast journalist Stephanie Hendricks. We're going to be discussing her book, Divine Destruction, Wise Use, Dominion Theology, and the Making of the American Environmental Policy. Before we get started, I'll remind you, first, the opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the KUCI staff or management or the UC Board of Regents. Stephanie, we got you on board.
Hey, thanks for having me, Robert.
Hey, welcome. It's good to have you. Let's get into this. What is the Wise Use movement and Dominion Theology, and how did you stumble upon their weird partnership?
Well, I'm going to answer that in reverse order.
Okay.
I was hired by a forest conservation organization as an investigative journalist to find out who was trying to dismantle a very well thought out plan for managing the 11 federal forests in the Sierra Nevada. This was a plan that took 30 years and $30 million, and it was a collaboration between timber industry and environmentalists and all sorts of folks. And everybody was real happy with it, and they were happy with it for years, and then all of a sudden, the Bush administration came into power, and there were these appeals to what's called the framework of the Sierra Nevada. So I was hired to document these appeals or these attacks on the plan, and they were expecting me to find timber industry, which are the traditional people who are trying to take down the forest. And, of course, they were there, but much to my surprise, the bulk of the appeals to this plan were coming from a group of individuals in organizations known together as the Wise Use Movement. And this is a group of many kinds of citizen groups, but they all have some things in common, which are to repeal environmental regulations for different reasons. They all have their different reasons for doing this. Some people are off-road vehicle users. Some people are resource extraction people. They want to take minerals or oil or things like that out, or timber for that matter. Some people want to build resorts and use our public land and not pay us anything for it. So these were all the folks involved in this. And so from the Wise Use discovery, because I'd never really heard of these folks before, I kept seeing popping up people who were also involved in the Christian Coalition. And I'm like, well, what's this all about? And then I discovered the whole segment of Christians calling themselves Dominion Theologists or Reconstructionists. And these are folks that interpret the Bible to mean that we have dominion over the earth, and some of these people actually believe that we need to use up the earth so that Christ can return. And a lot of these folks are in league with the fundamentalist Christians who gained office in Congress, who assisted the Bush administration in becoming in place. And in fact, some policy observers believe that there are over 3,200 fundamentalist Christians who believe this that are serving in our government right now in staff positions and positions with these congressmen. And I can talk about one of the more glaring examples, which is the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Stephen Johnson. I can talk about him a little bit later. But these are people who have an ideology. And the ideology is that we don't have to worry about preserving the earth because we're in end of times. And in fact, it might even be the Bush administration's divine mission to hasten the end of times. And this ideology justifies repealing nuclear weapons treaties. It justifies just complete annihilation of protections for all public health issues related to air, water, soil, and that kind of thing. So I believe, and in some of my interviews with people who work in these areas, such as Robert Kennedy Jr., believes that there really is an ideological aspect to some of this public policy on environmental issues coming from the Bush administration and the new Christian right in Congress. The element that I stumbled upon researching this even further when after I got the book contract, which was totally unexpected, it was kind of an accident, that's another story, was that there are a group of evangelical Christians who interpret the Bible a different way, and they interpret the Bible that the earth is God's creation and that we have to restore the earth so that Christ can return. And to me, the big story about this is that these evangelical Christians who have this definition are in Washington, they're visiting Congress people that they helped get elected, and they're really having a holy war over environmental issues, and there is a split in this right-wing fundamentalist Christian bloc that enabled the Bush administration to get into office and enabled Bill Frist, Rick Santorum, Tom DeLay, all the new Christian right people who are promoting very destructive anti-environmental legislation. There's a split in this group now, and they're having a big fight over the environment. So I, as someone who is an environmentalist and who has been frightened by this sort of takeover of our government, I have hope that there will be a support in the American public for the fundamentalists, even if you don't agree with them on other issues, for their work on protecting our environmental laws and restoration that has to happen for us to maintain the planet, as we're seeing now with climate change and global warming and all that. So I hope that answers your question. But
that was a mouthful, but very, very informative. So these Christian fundamentalists, some of them believe this, that we need to hasten the destruction of the environment, and others have the exact opposite viewpoint, but they're both Christian fundamentalists.
Right. And the ones who are saying, oh, we're in end of times and so forth, I want to point to one in particular named Tim LaHaye, who actually lives down in your area, a little farther south, I think, but but Southern California. I don't know if you've heard of him or not.
Oh, yes.
He wrote the Left Behind series, which created a very sold 70 million copies, and then after Katrina hit, his book sales spiked even more. And this is supposed to be a fictional accounting of what happens in the end of times, but people believe it to be true. And so he fostered this sort of grassroots popular culture myth that we are now in end of times. He did that on that level. On a government level, he helped found the Council on National Policy and the Moral Majority, which were very strategic organizations in getting the Bush administration in place. And it was part of a very big plan that oil and defense industry corporate executives who got together with these religious leaders to strategically take over the government. And it's very well documented by folks like Robert Kennedy Jr. in his book Crimes Against Nature, and other people have written extensively about this. Mark Crispin Miller.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have done a lot more work on this than I have. But in any case, Tim LaHaye is sort of a ground zero kind of character of someone who worked on a grassroots level, moving millions of Americans to believe this ideology while supporting this corporate-driven government policy that was driven by these oil and defense industry corporations. And so it's kind of a marriage. The wise use movement is very heavily funded by the auto industry and some of the agrochemical industries like Dow Chemical, Monsanto, things like that. And so the two of them together worked together to get this sort of corporate invasion into our government, in my opinion, with a religious facade. And so when I go on Christian radio stations, my discussion is, you know, there are places in the Bible that say, for example, those who destroy the earth will be the first ones destroyed.
Yeah.
When you look at really what the Word of the Bible is, assuming that, you know, you believe that that's the Word of God and so forth, which is sort of a definition of a fundamentalist, how Christian really are these people in our government? Because they're not, their actions are not Christian. And this strategy of looking at this came to me from a a Dominion theologist, fundamentalist minister who advised me and who allowed me to interview him, who used to be on Rick Santorum's staff. So he said, you know, they're not going to come right out and say, oh, yes, you know, it's the end of times, although they're starting to come out of the closet a little bit. But he said, look at their actions. Look at how they vote. Look at the policies that they enact and see if it's to preserve the earth or if it's to destroy the earth, and you'll see which it is. So clearly, that's what I did in my book. I looked at to see how people voted, to see, you know, what the decisions were that they made, and they're clearly to destroy the earth. So you have to ask, well, why? You know, I mean, corporate profit certainly is one, but these people are also, like Stephen Johnson, for example, is the head of the Environmental Protection Agency. He's entrusted with protecting our public health. He goes to an evangelical church in Maryland, yet this same man, who's an evangelical Christian, came up with a program to intentionally dose low-income, one-and-under babies in neighborhoods of color in Florida with what they call routine pesticides. And mm-hmm. I got to tell you, as a mother, there's no such thing as a routine pesticide when you have a baby. You just keep your babies away from pesticides. There's no such thing as any kind of routine exposure. But yet, his program, with our tax dollars, was offering low-income families of color $970, a new camcorder, and clothes to intentionally dose one and under infants with pesticides. So this is coming from an evangelical Christian. More recently, that program's still going along. When he had his confirmation hearings to be head of the EPA, Barbara Boxer and Henry Waxman it made him shut that program down, but as soon as he was confirmed, he renewed the program. So it's still going on today. There's another new human testing rule that advocates human testing of pesticides on pregnant women and children of limited capacity and abused and neglected children. Now, I don't know about you, but if you think back to what happened under the Hitler regime with Joseph Mengele doing human experimentation on people, we're not so far away from that right now. And so I'm raising this question: why are we not paying attention to this, and why are we not rising up and saying this is not okay in society? And to the Christians, I say, why are you not examining whether this is a Christian thing or not?
Yeah.
What is with this?
Right. I think that's how we have to handle this in a certain sense. Because you're, first of all, I want to talk about this whole end times thing, the Tim LaHaye, and there was, before Tim LaHaye, there was
J.R. Rushdoony.
Right, and there was the Hal Lindsey back in the 70s.
Well, yeah, J.R. Rushdoony was the one that kicked off Lindsey and LaHaye and everybody. J.R. Rushdoony was to the Reconstructionists and the End of Times folks what John Coltrane is to jazz, you know?
yeah, okay. So what I think people need to understand is that this interpretation of end times is a new phenomenon, this sort of interpretation. This is what? It's 100 years old?
Well, I don't think it's a new interpretation at all. I think it's as old as the hills, and I think it's been used to manipulate people for centuries. But I think that that the corporate interests who plugged into these ministers decided to use it as a strategy starting in 1980. In 1982 is when the Council on National Policy, the Moral Majority, and the Federalist Society were all created, which James Dobson took on the Federalist Society, which, as you probably know, is a top-secret organization that is wants absolute Christian domination in the world, and they focus on the U.S. justice system, and they proudly boast of having placed Samuel Alito and John Roberts on the United States Supreme Court. And in fact, Karl Rove was boasting about the Federalist Society doing that about a month ago.
Yeah.
So I'm saying they're starting to come out of the closet a little bit. So this pairing up of fundamentalist religion, Christianity in particular in the United States, with corporate aggression,
yeah.
I might say, because it justifies war. You know, it
mm-hmm.
justifies killing people who are not Christians. It justifies a lot of things. And the end of, you know, they've twisted. Now, here's how twisted Tim LaHaye is, for example. One of the women I interviewed for my book, who is a Tim LaHaye devotee, loaned me her prophecy Bible. And it's Tim LaHaye wrote this. However, it looks just like a regular King James Bible. It's got onion skin, it's got the font, but when you read the text, he's totally twisted what a normal Bible looks like.
Right.
But if you're not an educated, independent thinking person, and to be honest, my opinion is that a lot of people turn to religion because they're lost, because they're hurting, they're looking for comfort, they're looking for direction, they're looking for structure, they're looking for something to grab hold of. I can see people in those kind of vulnerable states of mind grabbing a hold of this prophecy Bible and saying, oh, well, it must be true. It looks like a Bible. It feels like a Bible. It sounds like a Bible. You know, and it's really no different than what government, you know, what has happened over the centuries with twisting religion around, like the Inquisition, the Spanish Inquisition, you know, in the 16th century. But this is our version of it, and it's going on right now. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think all of us have fundamentalist Christian relatives or friends or associates. And one of my complaints to the left audience, to the left wing intellectuals, is we've been too arrogant about fundamentalist Christians, and we've villainized them, and we've gotten angry with them, and we disconnect from them. And I'm saying, the way things are right now, they're starting to get disillusioned, especially the folks in the Bible Belt after Katrina, when they were abandoned, basically. And we need to reach out to those people and form community with them and pull out common values and say, okay, you don't believe in killing, I don't believe in killing. Okay, we got that one down. You know, God says the earth is sacred. We think that we should preserve the earth. You know, pull out at least values on environmental levels and say, we've got to join together and get these maniacs out of government. You know, that's what I would like the people who are the left wingers to say. And to the Christians, I would like to say, are these people really Christian? And are they exploiting you? And are they manipulating you? And if so, help us get these people out of office and get people with good moral values and good values toward the environment and toward the future of our children. And let's work to turn this around, because we're going to be in an irreversible slide especially with climate change, if we don't do something immediately.
Yeah, I agree with you, and we've got to reach out to these Christians, and if you can approach them in a way that you're saying, you know, hey, nothing wrong with being a Christian,
right?
But this sort of brand of Christianity that somebody is laying on you, there, you got to think about that. The point I was trying to make earlier about, I was saying that there's sort of a new interpretation of end times. What I was talking about is certain aspects of how they go into it, about the rapture and certain things that need to be put in place.
The post-millennium, the pre-millennium,
right.
That whole thing?
Yeah, that wasn't around like a while ago. Am I not correct on that?
Well, actually, they've been arguing that for centuries, but in terms of it really getting to larger audiences, it wasn't around before certainly before the turn of the century, it started getting more and more momentum. But in recent times, when the Christian radio network started getting up and preachers were able to reach huge audiences with these vast Christian radio stations, it's when it really gathered significant momentum, you know, so that people, you can get on any Christian network and start talking about end of times and post, and have big arguments about post and pre-millennium. I mean, they're not passionate arguments, because they basically agree about the same thing, but they will agree about this 1,000 years of destruction before Christ comes or after Christ comes, and or you know, if Christ has been here for 1,000 years and then it's going to happen, or, you know, there are these details in the academic theological discussions that happen. I want to point out too that the core of the environmental argument among the Christians is the issue of whether or not God is in nature. And the fundamentalist dominion theologists and reconstructionists say that no, God is not in nature, and that anyone who believes that God is in nature is a pantheist and a heretic, and is sinning, is full of sin. And the fundamentalist Christians who believe that God is in nature, this is an argument that they're having. And Robert Kennedy made a really salient point about this, where he pointed out that, take yourself out of the Christian paradigm, but if you look at all the spiritual leaders that brought us information that was written down, like Moses, like Buddha, like Muhammad, like Christ, they all went out, guess what, into nature. They all went out into the wilderness, and that's where God spoke to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that was a really interesting point to make with any fundamentalist who says that nature must be destroyed or must be subjugated, because it's really nature. And I have to be honest with you, I'm a spiritual person, and I feel that I want to pray when I'm in nature.
So I'm
trying to get people to make that connection between protecting nature and now the wise use movement. One of the spins that they along this parallel that they do is they refer to people, the environmentalists, as eco-terrorists. They've coined that word. And they've Ron Arnold, the founder of the Wise Use Movement, or at least he calls himself that, and he's publicly claimed called for the killing of environmentalists. He basically says that there's plenty of nature to go around, and what's all the big fuss about? These people have their hidden agendas, which he's not been able to tell me. I've debated him on live radio. Mm. So they twist this around that environmentalists are bad people. The Wise Use Movement's newest campaign on this twisting of information is a campaign that you may have seen. It's I call it the Environmentalists Hate Black People campaign. It's a disinformation campaign about malaria in Africa, where they're saying that DDT is the only the only thing that can fight malaria, and that because environmentalists don't want DDT, which has been banned worldwide, by the way, that they're racist. And there's a bunch of lies around that, but one of those is that there are more ways to deal with malaria than DDT, and ways that don't hurt future generations of Africans. So in a way, using DDT is very racist, because it very is heavily linked to reproductive and problems, low birth rates, and low birth weights of babies. So you could see a population drop in future generations of Africans with the use of DDT. But they're trying. Monsanto is involved in trying to push sales of that, even though they invented it, but they don't make it. But they stand to benefit through their genetically engineered seed business in India and China, who do make DDT if they get to push this. And I know that's a complicated topic for another day. I'm just saying the whole twisting of information and spinning that the Wise Use Movement has done in the past of villainizing environmentalists, that's their hottest thing right now, is trying to pit environmentalists against African Americans. And it's just terrible, because what they're pushing actually hurts people of color in Africa. So, that's how clever they are.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the sort of MO of a lot of the right-wingers. It's all about projection, and they call another people terrorist when the actions that, they're talking about killing people, isn't that a, terroristic act, and all of these kinds of things. And this is Out the Rabbit Hole. I'm speaking with Stephanie Hendricks. We're talking about her book, Divine Destruction, Wise Use, Dominion Theology, and the Making of American Environmental Policy, here on KUCI in Irvine. It seems that these wise users, like I said, like many right-wingers, they claim this worship of free markets, which don't really exist. But more importantly, the industries they front for are beneficiaries of so many non-free market government intervention programs.
Subsidy.
Right.
And tax dollars.
and protection of their monopolies. It's like they're for free markets when it means removing regulation from them, but against free markets when it means removing government subsidies for them or government protection of their monopolies.
Right, exactly. And it's really, we're seeing this in just simple issues like the food, the production of food in the world, where companies, again, like Monsanto, go into countries like India, where they'll patent, they'll genetically patent a seed of rice that's been grown for thousands of years, and then make it illegal for poor people to grow it. And then they create famine because these people get arrested, or they're forced to use a system of farming that uses pesticides. Pesticides as a suicidal device is like rising like wildfire in India right now because of farmers in debt to corporations like Monsanto for these kinds of tactics that come in, and they're trying to take hold of their food supplies. And this is an American corporation. I mean, there's no corporate accountability. Forget about, Christian values. I mean, alone,
Right.
But in terms of what, to me, this creates terrorism against the United States, because when people are hungry and they're desperate, and the reasons that they perceive of being hungry and desperate is because of an American corporation like Monsanto, like Pepsi Cola, creating a famine and drought in southern India, in Kerala, when they contaminated the aquifers in a very lush, beautiful area where they were manufacturing, and then the water was destroyed, so crops couldn't be grown, and people are destitute. I mean, this is what makes people hate us, aside from the fact that we respond to resistance about corporate invasions with military invasion, and then we kill them just outright. So, you know, until we have corporate accountability, not only internationally, but I think they influence who gets into our government. We don't have campaign reform so that an honest person gets popularly elected. It's who's got the most money to hire the best public relations people and best advertising people to buy the most commercials, to get the most spin, to dupe people into thinking that they're, you know, divinely supposed to lead us into whatever, you know. So yeah. I think we need some, I think we all need to look at corporate accountability. And when we vote for somebody, we need to look. There's a great website called Open Secrets. That's Open Secrets with an S on the end, .org. And it takes a look at who's giving money to political candidates running for office. And I think we need to look at who's funding our politicians, even on a local level, even for school board and city councils, all the way up to, you know, the president of the country. We need to see.
Well, what I personally would like to see is on the ballot, it would be required that each candidate would next to the name have to have listed their top five contributors.
Oh, that's a good idea.
You know, I mean,
that's a really good idea.
And then let the voters decide, you know, where the money's coming from, and that's who these people are going to be beholden to. I got to get back to one thing that you said a little earlier, because I just think this is one of the most evil things I've ever heard, and it just bears repeating. And this is the thing about Monsanto and some of these other corporations patenting seed lines or genetic
rice, types of rice and other grains. You know, I wish I were an expert on this. The woman who I've heard speak about this, and how that's how I've learned about it, is Vandana Shiva, Shiva, and people can Google her, and she's a scientist in India who's been speaking out against this and talking about how these famines occur. That's one tactic, is by them patenting a type of rice or seed that people who have subsistence economies that they need to survive, and then making it illegal for them to grow their own food. Another tactic that she talks about, and other people have studied and are trying to shed light on, is that multinational corporations, some U.S., there are also some European companies, will go into a country where people are living subsistence economy, growing, maybe in Africa, there are places where the concept of private land, it hasn't been around ever, and they're collectively, you know, grazing their cattle or growing little plots, and they have kind of collective farming areas. And so a multinational will come in, will bribe government officials to buy land and kick the people off, creating a big group of urban poor who don't have a place to grow food anymore. And then they'll grow an export crop on there, like cotton, that also requires, or they will, it doesn't really require this, but they will use tons of pesticides on there that then contaminate the water supplies and the soil supplies. And then that money, the profit, goes out of the country and that doesn't come down to the people, you know. So people wonder why there are famines in Africa. Well, that's why, because this is a process that's going on with corporations who are trying to, you know, make money off of basically invading these developing countries and taking their natural resources, including their land. So this is, most Americans aren't, I mean, I used to think, oh, why don't those people in Africa, why don't they just grow food? Why don't they just, you know, roll up their shirt sleeves and get to work?
What's their problem?
So I didn't have a concept of how, they're not all American, it's not just American corporations that are doing this, but Monsanto is one of the larger ones there's one, Syngenta, which is French, and Dow Chemical is another bad guy. We probably remember, well, you sound pretty young, so you might not have even been born, but in 1984, there was a huge, the worst industrial disaster the world has ever known, when a Dow pesticide plant blew up in Bhopal, India, instantly killing 15,000 people, and about another couple of 100,000 people have either had chronic illness or babies with birth defects or have died since then, and still hasn't been held accountable for that. Dow Chemical hasn't, and it was known as Union Carbide, but it's changed its name, but it's the same people that running the company, the same exact infrastructure. So, you know, and they had another accident in Seadrift, Texas, where a worker was killed, and they've polluted the Gulf of Texas. So they pollute here as well. But there's no corporate accountability, and these are the same people who contribute heavily, heavily to the Bush campaigns and to the people who are these new Christian right in office. So we've got to just, A, stop giving them our money, and B, really examine the politicians and see if they're getting their money from these corporations who are wreaking havoc in the world, and just, you know, be determined to not give them to not give them our vote.
Did you hear the recent thing about John Negroponte? That came out this week, and something where the security and one of the government agencies that looks at the accounting of corporations, that make sure everything's above board, like obviously didn't get done with Enron. But
right.
Negroponte has said, oh, well, we can say that there's a national security concern and then remove them from that kind of oversight. And so, you know, these kinds of things are, you know, coming out more and more every day. And why was Negroponte ever confirmed? And this is, again, we need to be more informed. We need to tell our congresspeople, wait a minute, you know, this guy is connected to these death squads in Central America in the 80s. Why, you know?
Oh, and I'll tell you, I produced a national live radio broadcast of the United Nations Security Council hearings on the eve of the Iraq invasion. And the Bush administration was so petty, they scheduled a press conference with Colin Powell just as the Iraqi ambassador was about to speak at the UN Security Council to distract the media. But we stayed with it at Pacifica Radio, and Negroponte started, here the Iraqi ambassador is pleading for the lives of his people, begging for more time, you know, saying we don't have weapons of mass destruction, you haven't found it, you know, give more time to look for it, but please don't kill our people. He's crying. This guy is crying, and Negroponte stands up and laughs and scoffs at him and goes, huh, and with his entourage flounces out in the middle of his testimony in front of the UN Security Council. I mean, what a low-rent guy, you know? I mean, no even facade of professional demeanor or courtesy that you would expect from a world class diplomat, and it was just, it made my stomach turn, and it was terrible.
I think you know, he demonstrates many traits of a sociopath, and
yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a lot of folks like that actually in our government.
Right, Rumsfeld comes to mind.
Yeah,
yeah,
Karl Rove is number one in my book. Hopefully he's going to be indicted. Randy Rhodes on Air America has been proclaiming that Karl Rove is going to be indicted. I don't know how she knows that, and I don't know if it's true, but maybe she's just willing it to be true. I don't know. But,
well, that first came out from Jason Leopold at truthout.org, and then it sort of died, that story, even though he says, hey, my sources are firm. Somebody, there's another rumor going around that Gonzalez or somebody put something out about, well, this has to be kept under wraps, even though Rove may be indicted. It's, again, more executive branch abuse of power.
Well, and this whole NSA thing, they've got their senators, their corporate front, I call them corporate front senators, because they're not really, you know, they're not representing their people, they're representing the corporations that put them in power. They're saying, well, we can't even talk about the wiretaps on citizens. It's against national security to even talk about it. And you know, I don't know about your listeners out there, but this kind of behavior is so, we've got to really pay attention to it. When I travel, I have marked with S's on my boarding pass on my air ticket. And this is disturbing to me for a couple of reasons. I'll tell you, it started after I produced a live broadcast of the presidential debate in Florida in Coral Gables. My company had me flying out of Fort Lauderdale. And after I'd gone through two security checkpoints and I'd been waiting for 45 minutes at the gate, and I was walking down and I was just about to step my foot on the plane, they called me back. And they said, you know, Stephanie Hendricks, and I thought I'd forgotten something. But they also called back a Muslim woman with a headscarf, and I said, okay. They took us back to the gate where hundreds of people were coming in, going through the metal detectors. They made me take off my top shirt. They made me lift up my tank top, exposing my bra. Then they lifted up my bra, exposing my breasts. And this is at the gate when all these people are coming through. And then they wiped my breasts with a cloth and put it in this machine. Hmm. And I flipped out. I cried. I said, this is wrong. And they said, oh, it's because of 9/11. I said, and this is my own opinion, 9/11 was a bad business deal between the Bush administration and the Taliban. What you're doing is to make people afraid on purpose, and this is fascism, and you're going to be ashamed of this, and this is just wrong. Well, they threatened to arrest me. They said I was making a disturbance because people coming through the gate were seeing this, and they were seeing me crying and screaming all this. And I said, you don't pull me off my plane, have me expose my breasts in public. I have a natural response to that, and you tell me I'm the problem. We still have a right to cry in this country. And they finally let me go, which I was surprised. But the next week, Patti LuPone, the famous singer, had the same thing happen to her. And she was arrested, and they put her in jail. And it turned out, I found out later, that there was this rule that they had to search women's breasts because an Al-Qaeda informant had told them that women were going to smuggle bombs onto the planes in their breasts. And it's like, can't you just imagine this informant thinking, I can think of something that'll really mess them up. I'm going to tell them, you know. This Association of Women Business Executives complained, and they dropped the rule and they stopped doing it. But now every time I go, and I was asked, Mark Crispin Miller had me come to New York to speak in this author series, and I just went with my family. My whole family, all of our tickets were marked with these S's, and we get pulled aside, and all my family members and myself are, you know, we have to do the usual, but they pat us down, they ask us questions, and some of these Homeland Security people, I'm sure many of them are very, very nice, but overwhelmingly the majority I've been dealing with seem to be abusing their power, and they split us up, and they interrogated us. And what's kind of chilling for me, aside from the fact that it's no fun and I hated seeing my 16-year-old daughter go through it and my husband, is that when I produced talk shows years ago on Holocaust survivors, they said the first thing that happened when Hitler came into office was that the Jews had their travel papers marked, and there was a mark, and they'd be pulled aside when they travel from place to place. And guess what? That's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm informally collecting stories about people's experiences with this because I'm hoping to write another book that sheds light on this. But there was a guy in St. Louis, a Vietnam vet, who's they took off his prosthetic leg and they played catch with it. And then another 76-year-old man in Newark, New Jersey, had to strip down to his boxer shorts at the gate. So we have to look at this and realize and question what's going on here. And if there's an ideology, if people are saying, well, we're in end of times and this government is divinely leading us there, I think we have to question whether, A, that's true, and, B, you know, why are we falling for this? Why aren't we standing up for our democracy? Any other country in the world, we'd be not participating in it.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of the people out there, they're just asleep. They're just being amused to death with, you know, ridiculous, you know, reality TV shows and all of this kind of stuff. And just this doesn't – it's not an issue for them. And then there are the others that are just living in fear, that they've bought into it. They've drank the Kool-Aid that terrorists are going to get us. 9/11 was just, you know, one incident of many more to come. And it's like the communist scare, and they're under every rock and
right.
bedsheet. And so people are living like that. Wow, this is such a intense story you just shared.
I know. I'm sorry.
No,
it is an intense story. But you know, if I don't talk about this, if we don't talk about this stuff, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk about the concept of having a kind of crazy ideology driving our government policies. You know, the first step in historically, when democracies fail or when free societies fail, is the ability to speak freely and to have discussion and to have dialogue and to really, you know, be an independent thinker. And I love my country, and I think one of the great things about having been American prior to the Bush administration coming to office, it was the fact that we come from different backgrounds, so we have independent thinking, and we have diversity of thought and diversity of experience and diversity of opinion. And I value that. I treasure that. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that we represent so many different peoples of the world in our nation. And so when we're told not to talk about it, and we're being basically victimized for challenging this sort of repression that's coming down, it scares me, and it makes me feel like I should do whatever I can. And I'm a peaceful person, right? So I have to use all the peaceful means and skills and experience that I have to try to save our democracy. And I'm also a mom, so I have a vested interest for my children's future to try to, you know, keep this happening. And I think keeping discussion, dialogue, getting people to question things, and to really go back to our values of honesty and fairness and, you know, how we want the United States to be in the world. And it's, like you said before, it's okay to be a fundamentalist Christian as long as you're respecting the love thy neighbor business. Because you can't be a fundamentalist Christian and not love your neighbor. If you've got to love your neighbor, even if your neighbor is a fundamentalist Islamic person or a fundamentalist Jewish person or Buddhist person or whatever, because guess what? America was founded on freedom of religion. So I'm not saying, you know, to hate Christians or to hate fundamentalist Christians. I'm saying we've got to engage and form community and form dialogue and really get people to separate out manipulative ideology from what's real, you know, and really hold our elected officials and our government employees accountable. Good news on the EPA front, though. Yesterday, I don't know if you saw this, 9,000 scientists representing the EPA and various branches of the federal government wrote a public letter to Stephen Johnson, the head of the EPA, complaining about political appointees in the EPA pressuring them to twist their data in response to corporate pressure from companies to actually like repeal public health protections for corporate interests. And what's, you know, exciting to me about this is scientists do not like to do this kind of thing. They just want to do their science, and they want to do their work, and they want to have linear results, and they don't want to get politically involved with anything. So for 9,000 scientists working for the United States government to come forth and say enough is enough, get corporate pressure out of our face, is to me a heroic measure. And I would love for everybody in the United States to call the EPA and say, you know, you listen to your scientists and make sure they have good working conditions and get corporate influence out of the Environmental Protection Agency. We want our public health protected. That's what you're supposed to do. That's why you're the protection agency. So there are people working within this government that is influenced by Dominion theologists, by wise use people who are funded by corporations, who are rising up and speaking out. And we, as American citizens, I think we have to support these people and say, yes, we're with you. We're behind you 100%. Help us take back our government. You know?
I agree with you, Stephanie. We're speaking with Stephanie Hendricks. Her book is Divine Destruction, Wise Use, Dominion Theology, and the Making of American Environmental Policy. And that's put out by Melville House. Nice publisher. They put out a lot of excellent stuff. But this is Out the Rabbit Hole, KUCI in Irvine. I'm Robert Larson. So we've got about, 12 minutes left, Stephanie. So let's, there's so much more we could really talk about here. And I want people to kind of understand, you know, what dominion theology is. We've kind of gone into that already. And let's see, the Reconstructionists. You mentioned that a little bit, and.
Let me talk a little bit about J.R. Rushton and the Reconstruction.
Yes, yeah. Let's talk about the Dominion theologists and Reconstructionists. They cross over in certain ways, but there are some differences.
There are some differences. Reconstructionists, the term means reconstructing the word of the Bible. And the modern father of this movement was J.R. Rushdoony, who passed away a few years ago, but whose ideology still lives on. His son-in-law and other relatives still publish a tremendous amount of Christian literature promoting his points of view, which include capital punishment for things like being an astrologer, or if you're a man, if you're a woman straying from marriage or having sex if you're not married. That's not true for men, only for women. Another cause for capital punishment would be being a homosexual. And if that's not chilling enough to hear those things, the way in which he believes capital punishment should be carried out is through public stoning, which means that the public will all participate in the killing. Men, women, children of the community get to pick up rocks and kill the homosexual, the astrologer, the woman who's not married, who's had sex, whatever it is, and do the killing themselves. And he convinced many Christians that this is a Christian way to go.
Yeah, can you say Taliban?
Well, and can you say Auschwitz?
Yeah. So, now, how many people actually believe this Reconstructionist view or what this Rushdoony sort of put into place?
I wish I could tell you that. I didn't have the luxury of research for my work and the time to really go down in the Bible Belt and conduct surveys and so forth. I listening to Christian radio, though, I can tell you that it's not an uncommon point of view, and that I did run into people who respected that point of view in my own community, which is considered liberal in Northern California up in Marin County, when I interviewed people at the Southern Conference, Baptist Conference Theological Seminary up here. And I also ran into someone from along that point of view at a Republican luncheon, a ladies' Republican luncheon. Again, I was expecting a kind of moderate group of Republican women. And when I went there, a Dominion theologist was speaking to them, and it was very unnerving for me because I did grow up in Berkeley. I grew up in a multicultural, sort of free-thinking environment. And when he started saying things like, when you hear the word multicultural, that's a code word for terrorists. So if your child, don't let your child be in a multicultural class at school. Actually, one of the things that all these guys, the Reconstructionists and the Dominionists, agree on is that the public schools are too vulnerable to sin to allow your kids to go. So you either have to put them in a Christian school or you have to homeschool them. And one of the guys I talked to was actually homeschooling his kids. That's how come he had time to work with me and give me advice on the book all the time. Anyway, that was one of the things this guy said. And another thing he said was that Indian reservations were terrorist cells, where terrorists, you know, from outside the country were gathering on Indian reservations. And if you consider the abortion clinic that got put in at the North Dakota Indian Reservation, I guess from their point of view, that would be considered a terrorist thing. But these women were getting whipped up into a frenzy. And he was going on and on and on and on about the terrorists this and the Islamic people are, you know, going to kill every Christian man and woman and child. And I was just practically open-mouthed. I was so taken aback by his fear-mongering and how crazy he was. But they were all believing it. And then finally this one woman, the one who had loaned me, went on to let me interview her and went on to loan me her Tim LaHaye Prophecy Bible, you know, stood up and said, do you believe George Bush is our divine leader leading us into end of times? And he said, why, of course I do. And I was like, oh, boy. Well, okay, but they all believed him. I was in a room of 100 women, and they, very wealthy Republican women, and they all believe this guy. So there's a grassroots thing going on here that's just real, and it's very successful.
Right, I remember reading that in your book, and it makes your jaw drop. It's funny, though, you also mention in the book that, if you're one to believe in the Book of Revelation, an argument could be made that Bush is actually the beast mentioned therein.
And there's a website. Yeah. John Paul commented to one of his staff that was reported in Italy that he, when he became ill of health, he said that his only regret was that he wasn't going to be able to confront Bush because he was concerned that he might be the beast.
Yeah, that's
that didn't come from me. That came from Pope John Paul.
Yeah.
And actually, if you do Google Bush and the beast, you will get websites of fundamentalist right-wing Christians who believe that Bush is the Antichrist and that all these that Falwell and all these folks are the false prophets. So there is, and I did not have time to explore that whole world of right-wing evangelical Christians. And I do think that that's a very tiny group. I think the group that is working on environmental issues is a bigger group, but still the group that believes in end of times is the biggest of all of those, I think.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah, I agree that the Bush as Antichrist is a pretty small group, but it shows you that you can take scripture and you can kind of layer whatever you want on it by selectively choosing what you look at.
Well, that's all religions.
Right. Yeah. So we're getting towards the end of the show here. So what I want to do, Stephanie, I always like to end on a positive note here. And again, we're speaking with Stephanie Hendricks. The book is Divine Destruction, Wise Use, Dominion Theology, and the Making of American Environmental Policy. So, let's end this on a positive note. What people can do to kind of be more informed about this or to take action and to understand that some of these people who are claiming to be for the environment actually are the opposite of that.
First of all, I'm excited about your listeners and your show, and thank you for the good work you're doing here. If you're a Christian, I would beg you and implore you to start discussions among your Christian colleagues to take on these people pretending to be Christian who are in the new Christian right, like Bill Frist and Rick Santorum and James Inhofe, people who are destroying our planet, and ask our Christian politicians, so-called Christian politicians, to be accountable and find out what their corporate connections are. And to the lefties out there who aren't necessarily religious, I'd say stop villainizing the Christians and start making friends with them and start dialoguing and trying to get them to, because frankly, when the Christians find out that they're being duped and manipulated, they're hurt. And it's no fun to be attacked by a lefty when you're feeling already disillusioned and betrayed. And so, it's best to, if a lefty says, look, I'm a peaceful person and I know you are too, and let's work together to get these maniacs out of government and get, people who have real Christian values in there. So to everyone, please don't be apathetic about your voting. From your local county supervisor and school board people all the way up to the president, look who's funding their races, and only promote the people who are going to make our country a better place with environmental protections and human rights protections and foreign policies that don't turn people into terrorists against us. And really, we've got to stand up and take responsibility, because we've been asleep too long. We don't have the luxury of being apathetic anymore. And it's like a part-time job to do this stuff. And it's better than sitting around feeling victimized and hopeless, I'll tell you. And once you get, here's another little tip that is a whole other show, but get off fossil fuel. I've been on biodiesel for 3 years, and it's a really good feeling knowing when I fill up my gas tank that no one died for my fuel and there's no climate change happening because of my fuel. And that's another part-time job, figuring that out. It's not easy. But, put your despair into activism, and you'll feel better about yourself, and we'll make a real change.
So. All right, excellent advice. Any web addresses you want to give out real quick?
Theocracy.org keeps a watch on Dominion Theologists. They do a great job, so if you're interested in the topic and want to know more about it, the Eureka Report is Y-U-R-I-C-A dot org. That's Catherine Eureka. She also is keeping an eye on the Dominion Theologists. Corp Watch, C-O-R-P-W-A-T-C-H dot O-R-G is a wonderful website to check out corporations. And as I mentioned before, OpenSecrets.org will tell you who's giving what money to your politicians. And those are all great resources to get started on getting these people out of office and getting good people in.
All right. We got to go, Stephanie. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Robert.